Okay, here we go. We're going live in 3, 2, 1.
Grab your mason jars, strap on that apron. It's time for Canning with the Diva, making her mark across the globe, teaching you how to safely preserve delicious recipes. Please welcome your host, Diane Devereaux,
the Canning Diva.
Hey everyone, it's Diane Devereaux, the Canning Diva, and thank you so much for tuning into Canning with the Diva. We are off to an awesome start this season, and I am super excited to share with you today an episode that I'm calling What is the Difference Between Dry Canning and Dry Packing? Now, those of you who follow me on social media and who have been with me for some time now, over 3 years ago, I posted the results of a 2-year-long testing phase with respect to dry packed potatoes. And for those of you that were on the journey with me, this will be later this year, this fall will be, close to 6 years total. Those of you that have been following and were with me in the very beginning know that this isn't something I created. I'm not taking credit for this recipe, but what I did about, 8-9 years ago was my interests were piqued, and I started making it because my friends over at Canning Rebels, one of their members, Ron, posted this and had been doing, the dry packed potatoes for years and was showing everyone in the group how he fries them up on weekends. And our mouths were watering. We were super excited. So for a while I had been canning it myself and consuming it. And then I thought, controversy even then that I thought, I'm going to spend the time and the money to send this particular process to the lab for several reasons, mainly too, because we weren't peeling our potatoes and we weren't covering them in water. We were using some type of fat or oil, which could be anything from olive oil, avocado oil, butter. You could use clarified butter, which is also called ghee. And it really was fascinating to me. It was absolutely delicious. So after consuming it for almost 3 years, I decided to finally, put my neck out there, if you will, and work with my laboratory to construct some really cool experiments, because one of them was just the dry packed potatoes, and I did different varieties of potatoes, russet, yellow, red skin, you name it. And then the other was I incorporated green bell peppers, onions, and garlic, because that's traditionally how we like our potatoes on the weekends. And sometimes I'll even incorporate them as a side dish, for dinner. So I wanted to add the additional vegetables to the jar. So I had them both tested. And obviously, those of you that have been following me, I shared the results from the lab, which I don't usually do. I blocked out the lab's name to save them some headache. And I shared the results, and it was overwhelmingly well received. A lot of us, even prior to the testing, were enjoying these. And it just kind of was like some affirmation. What it also did is it created a bit of hysteria to some groups and to some individuals online. And, that's okay. When there's new or there's change or things are innovating in a forward direction, not everybody likes that. And that's just reality. I can accept that. However, here we are in the start of 2024, and I think it's time I put some of this to rest here. So today's episode, because of the confusion I'm seeing out there on the internet, again, is titled, What is the Difference Between Dry Canning and Dry Packing? Now, while there are many well-intended people out there, sadly, there is so much confusion circulating the internet That's why I decided to clear things up a bit. For starters, the bulletin that was released a couple years ago, it was April of 2022 to be exact, it was posted online by the El Dorado County UC Master Food Preservers Program. It's a real fancy way of trying to sound official, if you will. And again, it was a well-intended announcement. I want to truly believe that. But sadly, bulletins like this distort reality by commingling terms and misrepresenting facts, which frankly fuels the divide amongst home canners. So I'd like to break it down. Now, for those of you tuning in, if you haven't taken a look at my website, I did go ahead and post the bulletin, if you will, on my website at canningdiva.com. For those of you not taking a peek at the website just yet, I'll kind of read through this bulletin so you can get a feel for what was published a couple years ago. So it has the word dry canning in quotes, and it says dry canning vegetables. And then in bold red, an unsafe practice circulating on the internet. Well, it reads another quote, homemade quote, canning method, and then put in parentheses. In other words, someone made it up themselves, end parenthesis. Mm-hmm. Have been making the internet rounds recently, which involves pressure canning vegetables without any added liquids. The food, either cooked or raw, is simply put in a jar and then processed according to a recipe's pressure and time specifications. It may seem appealing. Proponents say that the lack of added liquid results in a firmer vegetable after canning. Unfortunately, and then in bold, it says, this is an unsafe practice and can be potentially hazardous. Don't do it. Okay, so I'm going to stop right here for just a second. As you're listening to me read that first paragraph, you're probably like, wait, what? You know, first they're ripping on homemade. Well, hello, we're all home canners, okay? And there's nothing stating that we can't create our own recipes, especially me. I'm a recipe creator. I make a living. I'm a professional canner. I'm a cookbook author. I create recipes for a living. So the fact that I took something that was already out there and tested it doesn't mean this is something homemade and had they put it, in other words, someone made it up themselves. Like, hello, how do you think recipes are created? All right. So there's that. And then in the whole bolded, this is unsafe and can be potentially hazardous. Could you please explain why it's unsafe? And I thought they were going to start talking about the method itself, but then the bulletin switches gears. It goes right into fear-mongering. They use the B word, botulism. They've got to scare people, right? And then they commingle and bring into account dry canning using dry heat, which isn't what we're doing. So let me finish reading the bulletin and then we'll break it down a bit. So the second paragraph says, why is it unsafe? The pressure canning process is designed to destroy the spores of Clostridium botulinum, which can produce a toxin that causes botulism, a disease that can be fatal. To kill these spores and ensure a safe product, liquid is required along with the vegetable pieces so that heat can circulate properly and penetrate throughout the entire jar. Okay, that's not true. We raw pack or dry pack meat, fish, poultry without liquid. And it has a lesser acidity than a potato. So, okay, that was just disproven, but okay, we'll break it down further in a minute. Oh, then it says, further, bacteria and their spores are more sensitive to wet heat than dry heat. Without liquid, the bacteria would be killed off much more slowly. Okay, that's not true either, but okay. Studies will be needed to determine if dry canning, that's not what we're doing, if dry canning vegetables could be done safely, and if so, what processing adjustments would be necessary? Okay, so the 2 years I spent working with my laboratory and a team of people isn't adequate for you folks, but okie dokie. All right, let's wrap it up here. It says, but what about folks who have used the dry canning method and not gotten sick? It is, of course, possible to improperly process food and not get sick, but this is merely luck. Bacteria are randomly distributed throughout our environment. You could process one batch of food and have no problem, but another time, bacteria could be present that could make you ill or worse. Why rely on luck? Can you believe it? This is coming from an authority like department. I'm not even interjecting my own words. I'm literally reading this verbatim. I'm just as shocked as you are. Okay, so last paragraph. To be safe, always use a current research-based recipe from a reputable source, and carefully follow all steps in the process, including preparing the food, filling the jars, and using the stated time and pressure, adjusted for altitude as necessary, was placed in parentheses. Okie dokie, Smokey. Let's break this down. For starters, there is a gross misunderstanding of what dry packing truly is within the realm of home canning. Dry packing has been used since home canning began. This method of filling jars is nothing new to home canning, and it certainly is not unsafe, or we would not have successfully used this familiar jar packing method for so long. Well, what is dry packing? I explained it in detail in one of my blogs called Dry Packed Potatoes Canning Recipe. You can find that on my website at canningdiva.com. But in a nutshell, what dry packing is, it is the method of packing food in jars, okay? But you're merely eliminating the instructional step of covering said food with water. We are simply raw packing the food into jars without water, filling each jar to the required headspace, then processing the filled jars for a specified length of time in a pressure canner or a water bather. And that's it. For example, we do this when we are packing jars full of raw, uncooked meat or poultry or fish. We don't cover the meat or the poultry or the fish with water. That's essentially dry packing. Many of us call it raw packing. However, I simply redefine this method of jar packing as dry packing to differentiate it from the standard norm. This differentiation isn't new. It's just merely, I'm giving it its own terminology. And doing so doesn't suddenly make this method of jar packing unsafe. So let's get that just right out of the way. Now, where is the confusion coming from? Well, it's obvious the term dry packing has somehow been confused and commingled with the unsafe practice of dry canning. See, confusing the two totally different methods, commingling the terminology, wielding fear as a weapon, and telling home canners that you're not smart enough to understand science and math, has essentially opened a dangerous floodgate of misinformation, disrespecting home canners and recipe creators across the globe. So let me end the confusion right here and right now. Dry packing food in jars is not the same as dry canning. Well, what is dry canning? Let's talk about that for a moment. Let's talk about what dry canning truly is and how it got its start. In a nutshell, dry canning was a very short-lived concept of using a residential oven to process food in jars for long-term storage. Well, believe it or not, using a residential oven to preserve food in jars actually became popular around the turn of the 20th century. They're guesstimating like 1905. Now, it became popular not because it was a proven food preservation method, but because housewives were wanting to find ways to keep their kitchens clean, they wanted less prep time, and many individuals, because at that time we overprocessed a lot of our high acid foods, they were very disgusted and disturbed by how the fruit would look. It would be, the color wouldn't be bright, it would be dull, and usually because of the overprocessing, the fruit would be mushy. So they thought that if they used their oven and packed the food in jars, put the lid and ring on, stuck it in the oven, that it would keep the fruit brighter and it would retain the fruit's integrity. Okay, so I get it. I do see, what they were trying to accomplish, and God bless them, they tried. However, while the oversimplified logic to achieve the same outcome as water bathing was applied, these individuals did not understand or consider the composition of a glass canning jar. See, failing to take into account how a glass jar would respond to dry heat was a huge mistake. See, dry heat from an oven cavity is substantially hotter than wet heat used in a water bather or a pressure canner. And the outcome of using an oven's dry heat to process glass canning jars was explosive, literally. See, in 1908, they were actually, documenting in those 3 years, they have several cases of people getting terribly, terribly burned due to exploding fruit in jars. And here you thought pressure canners were the only thing that was dangerous. No, people were literally opening their ovens, exposing that glass to now a temperature swing. Okay. And the glass was shattering and expelling boiling hot fruit and glass shards onto the individual, right? Into their kitchen, all over them. Now, ultimately, the use of residential ovens for canning raw ingredients in jars was deemed unsafe due to the glass not being able to withstand a dry heat environment, which, okay, in turn caused those explosions. In some cases, the glass exploded inside the oven cavity. And what would happen is as it exploded, it would also then shatter and explode the glass door of the oven. So now you have more glass projectiling out into the kitchen. It was horrific. So by 1945, countless American articles and radio advertisements were warning people left and right about the dangerous results from, such explosions. And namely because people were so severely burned. One woman was recorded to have lost her eyesight. Many others received serious cuts and other serious injuries, and of course, damage to their ovens and to their homes. What I want to say here, though, is dry canning. This is what misconstrued articles, or what do we call that thing? A bulletin, maybe an announcement. I'm not sure. It's not really an article, but using that word dry canning when that's not even remotely close to what we're doing is where the frustration stems from. And it's actually a very irresponsible way to respond to something that they could have easily just taken some time to dive into. This misuse of canning jars is not what we're doing when we're dry packing food for home canning. We are not using dry heat from an oven to process our canning recipes. We are using wet heat, just like we do with all of our home canning recipes. So regardless if we dry pack raw chicken or potatoes or fish into a jar without adding any water, we are still using wet heat to process each jar of food. Further, we're not preserving dried food in jars either. The unfounded notion that without adding water to the jar, its contents are without moisture is just as ridiculous as it is untrue. There most certainly is moisture in the foods being dry packed and preserved. We aren't canning beef jerky, for crying out loud. There is moisture in the food, which is why you will often see water droplets inside of the jar kind of hovering at the top. You'll see that there after processing. It's also why you see a collection of water and food particulates at the bottom of a jar after processing. It is obvious the interior contents of the jar are not without moisture. So therefore, we're debunking the rumor that heat during processing failed to penetrate the food because it was, quote, dry. Yeah, you can actually have a complete thermal transfer of heat throughout every single fiber of meat, of a vegetable, of poultry, and of fish without adding extra water to the jar. Now, while many are misrepresenting dry packing as using dry heat, we are starting to see the reality couldn't be further from the truth. In its simplest form, using wet heat to cook and process food in jars is accomplished because there's actually hot water or hot steam in the can or vessel, and there's moisture within the fiber of the food. Now, I'm going to stop right here for just a quick second, because what I have seen happen when I've watched individuals in various canning groups, including my own, I've watched individuals spout these terms. Oh, it's dry heat. You can't use that. And then I've watched the individual who's actually made the dry packed potatoes say, no, 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 it's not dry heat. I'm still canning it. I'm not using an oven. And you would think at that point, the conversation would open up to more dialogue so that the other individual who truly doesn't understand what we're doing would want to learn more. But unfortunately, this is the point where I've watched a lot of the naysayers kind of dig their heels in more. So what I want to bring up next is the difference truly between dry heat, okay, wet heat, and glass. All right, this is important. So for those of you that are running into this a lot, and you know in your heart of hearts that, you know, okay, it's delicious, it's working, it's been tested. We've been making and consuming this now for going on, well, let's see here. That was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, going on 10 years now, probably even longer before Ron even, you know, did this, you know. When you're running into combat and you're like, oh my gosh, people are just all over me. I'm getting kicked out of a group because I'm saying this is amazing. I want you to reflect back to this portion of the podcast, because this is where critical thinking, common sense comes in, and you can understand the difference between dry heat, wet heat, and the different types of glass. All right, so let's dive in.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
At Canning University, we're unlocking the flavors of food preservation year-round. Dive into a world of safe and confident canning with our range of digital classes. From principles of pressure canning to the art of pickling, there's a course for every taste. Enjoy diverse learning mediums, including engaging videos, interactive PDFs, exclusive podcasts, and course certification to prove your skills. Join us on this delicious journey. Enroll now at canning.university.
Dry heat used in cooking is essentially hot, dry air without any moisture. It does not mean the food itself is without moisture, just the heat used is dry. We typically cook using dry heat, and the heat source is either situated above or below the food. Let me say that again. We typically cook using dry heat, okay? And the heat source, okay, the heating element is either above or below the food. Now, the most common use of dry heat is cooking on a stovetop. When you get out a skillet and you place it on your stovetop, the heat source is below the food because it's at what? The base of the pot or the skillet or the pan. And it is one directional. It's coming up from the bottom to cook the food, and it works upward. That is dry heat. Okay. The food itself may not be dry, but the heat is. Another common use of dry heat is using a conventional oven. And conventional ovens are used to either bake, roast, or broil. In an oven, the heating element can be above or below the food, and the dry heat can actually be circulated throughout the oven cavity with a fan or a ventilation system. At no time during the water bathing or pressure canning process are we using dry heat to process the food in jars. Now, we're using dry heat at the bottom of the canner to heat the vessel, but within that vessel, there is water. There's water covering every ounce of that jar in a water bather. And there's roughly 3 quarts of water inside a pressure canner, because we are going to heat using what? Pressure. Okay, so it's still wet heat. Got it? All right. Now, the only occurrence of dry heat when pressure canning would be if the pressure canner ran dry during its operation. Now, meaning the canner expelled all of its water from within the vessel. This is why we do not vent our pressure canner for longer than 10 minutes. And if your pressure canner has not gained the proper pounds of pressure after venting, you shut it off and you take a peek because somewhere, somehow, pressure is escaping, which means heat's escaping, which means what? The water's escaping. So for those of you who are new to pressure canning, when a pressure canner runs dry, the glass jars usually shatter and the food is always burnt. Why? Because the environment changed from wet heat to dry heat, and glass canning jars cannot handle dry heat, nor can it handle vast increases in temperature compared to wet heat. So essentially, even if your jars don't shatter, let's say you caught it in time, but it still ran dry, your food is now burnt. You're going to notice it because of the odor. Everything's going to smell scorched. It's going to look scorched. And trust me, it will taste scorched. All right. Now, dry heat increases the temperature much higher than when we use wet heat. Now, compared to water bathing or pressure canning, which slowly increases and decreases the temperature, dry heat is just hotter. It is for this reason a glass canning jar cannot be considered or used like bakeware. Many of us cook and bake with glass bakeware in our homes. To accomplish this, though, we safely use glass bakeware products similar to what would be a popular brand, Pyrex, right? Pyrex and similar are created from tempered glass, which is designed to withstand higher temperatures and temperature differentials. Essentially, tempered glass has been strengthened to be upwards of 5 times stronger than untreated standard glass. Despite what many believe, a glass canning jar or a mason jar is not made from tempered glass. A glass canning jar is made from annealed glass. Annealed glass is simply standard glass. And while it is strengthened to be made, you know, more durable, it's not created equal to tempered glass. Therefore, it will stress crack when it's exposed to high heat. Now, if you don't believe me and you don't want to take my word for it, just head over to, you know, Ball Kerr's manufacturer website. Just head right over to their FAQ section, okay, which is their, you know, question and answer area. And just look for the question that says, can I use the jars in the oven for baking? And when you select that button, you'll see a drop down open and it'll say, and I'm going to put it in quotes here because I took it right from the website, "We do not recommend baking in any size or shape of Ball or Kerr canning jars. The glass used for Ball and Kerr canning jars is not tempered for oven use and is not meant to be used as bakeware. The jars are safe for use for home canning recipes, cold or room temperature food storage, cold beverages, and crafting." Notice how it doesn't even say that the jars are suitable for freezing. So it's the extreme temperature because it's an annealed glass that makes it not suitable for canning in an oven, baking in an oven, or freezing. Now, you can clearly see in this podcast and on my website the vast difference between dry canning and dry packing. And with that bulletin, you know, it amazes me that an entity who's been elevated to an authority-like status could be so intentionally misleading, inaccurate, and frankly, divisive. At the end of the day, I believe I said it best when I was interviewed for the Food Chain podcast, which is hosted by the BBC Worldview. You know, I was interviewed this January of 2024, and you know, we spent two hours talking. It was wonderful, and I was very pleased with the outcome of the podcast because there were other professionals, food historians even, that were interviewed just like I was. And then she also took time to interview somebody from the National Center of Home Food Preservation. I highly encourage you to listen to that interview because you will start to see very clearly how cultures from around the world for centuries, for thousands of years, have been safely preserving food. And I'm sorry, but the United States is the new kid on the block. And I find it quite frustrating when I see divisive tactics and misinformation coming from our government-funded agencies like, you know, university extension offices or the National Center for Home Food Preservation. The quote I made that I'm so happy was aired is this: I don't want to see this divide. If there's one thing we can all come together on, it should be food. And I mean that. If an extension office or a master canner is so adamant that dry packing potatoes is unsafe, why don't they just test it themselves? Instead of writing misleading bulletins aimed at confusing and dividing the home canning community, just put the entire topic to bed once and for all and test it. In the meantime, I'm going to continue to advance this time-honored craft forward by being innovative and by expanding upon existing science and math to create delicious, safe recipes for home canners across the globe. I hope I've enlightened you. I hope I've shed some clarity on this confusion. And I truly hope that you have a very blessed canning season and you just keep on keeping on. Happy canning, everybody. I look forward to next week's episode. And I just thank you so much for your patronage, for your support, and for subscribing to my podcast, Canning with the Diva. Until next time, happy canning.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Canning with the Diva. For tips, recipes, and techniques, please visit us online at canningdiva.com.